David, thanks so much for joining.
I'm excited to be here, man. Let's make this thing happen. Enough is enough. It's time for us to empower other people. What's going on?
Well, it's I'm glad you asked, because I love to ask. You know, I'm pretty particular about the guests I bring on, and they usually have a very unique, empowering story, an empowering message. And I know you have that. And the first question I love to ask all my guests is a story of overcoming adversity. And also, I know with you, it actually connects to the second question, which is seeking external validation. So if you could walk me through, for those who don't know your story, a specific moment in your life where you were maybe chasing something external that you thought would really fulfill you and maybe come out the other side with the opposite reaction.
Yeah, you know, when I was running Lee Steinberg Sports and Entertainment, the most notable sports agency in the world, I was worth over $100 million, but I had access to what billionaires couldn't even afford to have access to. I had sideline access to the Super Bowl. I had backstage access to the Academy Awards, the Grammys, the Oscars, whatever it would be. And I had a complete energy gap between who I really was and what I want people to think I was. I was trying at that time to fill a God-sized hole with everything but God. And I truly, completely identified with my bank account. If my bank account went up $100, even though I was worth over $100 million, I would be happy. If it went down $100, even though I was worth over $100 million, I'd be unhappy. And so one thing that I've learned through the paradigm shift of understanding that if you live your life, I will be happy when I make this much money, you'll never be happy. When I shifted the paradigm to, I am going to make a lot of money for the sake of helping others and enjoy the consistent, everyday, persistent, without quit pursuit of my potential, not what other people want for me, not what was missing, not what I didn't have, not what social media says they wanted for me, but what I wanted in my divine direction, aligning the meaning of the past with my divine direction. And so that paradigm shift of I will be happy when to for the sake of what helped to, for me, teach me the lessons that were necessary to be passionate, purposeful, and profitable. And I did have to, you know, go through the experience of losing everything. You know, understanding that when the evidence was contrary to where I wanted to be or better, I still was being protected, promoted, loved, and perfected.
Well, I don't think anyone's lived that, you know, more eloquently than you have. I think there's a quote from the movie Fight Club. It's only after you've lost everything that you're free to do anything. Right. Would it be fair to say that you were kind of living in the arrival fallacy, that if I arrive with this much external accumulation of stuff, for lack of a better word, that then you will, quote, feel enough, be enough? It was that the kind of the driver for that massive success that you were striving for and arrived at?
Yeah, it was absolutely a world of not enough, you know, of not enough of anything. And even moving to a world of just enough is not enough for everyone. It may be just enough for you, but it still works within the realm of scarcity. You see, there's always a trade or negotiation, a quid pro quo, some sort of relationship between enough and not enough. And for me, until I started to understand truly with wisdom and faith what abundance was, where you give more to be given more, and you're given more to receive more, and you receive more to ask for more than more, so you can give more than more, be given more than more, receive more than more, and ask for more than more than more. That's the world of more than enough of everything. And so for me, understanding scarcity, understanding the world happening to me as a victim, for me as a negotiation, until I realized that there's a lot more to giving. Now, most people live in a zero-sum game. They give more and receive less. And here's the construct that's the problem with most people. Is they learn from their parents, grandparents, relatives like I have, their Bibles, that the more you give, the more you receive. And that is absolutely true in the infinite, in the God world. The more kindness you give, you will receive more kindness back. The more happiness you give, the more forgiveness you give, the more love that you give, you will receive it back. But we attribute that to man-made constructs where, you know, if you think the more hats that you give, the more hats you're going to receive, that's the same as saying the more money I'm going to give, the more money I'm going to receive. It's a man-made construct. The more value you give, the more value you will receive, but it comes in different information, materialization, and monetization, because those are man-made constructs. The same thing with time. In the intermittent amount of time, everything will come to its fruition, but in man-made construct time, things don't happen in the time frame in which you want them to happen. So problems, shortages, voids, obstacles, setbacks, they exist every day. And it's just the lapse of man-made time until the solution that exists alongside the problem becomes a resolution, a resolution. So every problem you have today, it's just the lapse of time between that problem and the solution. That's why it's called a resolution. And I help people shorten that distance, shorten that time frame, and give them an understanding of, look, don't give up on this now. It's just a lapse of time. And by you thinking, because there's no evidence or the evidence is contrary to where you want to be, that somehow that you're going to get there because you now are quitting on the process in the pursuit of your potential.
Yeah, I love your perspective on time. And you know, working with you one-on-one, I've been able to, you know, implement some of those things. And as you know, when we talked about when I was a guest on your show a few months back, working with student athletes aged 14 to 24, unfortunately for them, they feel like they don't have any time because of the devices that have been put in our hands with the access to the entire world via social media, their ability to monetize themselves, and this constant comparison. And what I find is that even when they arguably have more than my generation, your generation, as far as access to resources or actual resources, they feel more unsettled in their nervous system, more afraid, and living in a mindset of scarcity than any generation in history. What, as someone who's lived it and been in the sports world, because that's predominantly who I work with, what is your advice to these young people? As you know, it's difficult to tell them, you know, hey, put the phone down or focus on your family, your faith, when all the normal urges to stand out, to date a high quality partner, to potentially monetize their name, image, and likeness and be a superstar. What's your advice for these young people? Because I think you have a really good perspective as someone who's lived it.
Yeah, well, first of all, understanding their non-negotiables. They can use as much screen time as you want. You have 12 hours a day to do whatever you want. But if you want to be successful, you need to have non-negotiable behavior. And so I start with sleep because it's the number one habit with the most impact that you could have. So teaching young people the importance of unwinding from the screen time, putting their mind, body, soul in a position not only to recover, knowing that those who recover best perform the best, but also access information in a different way, access a higher source of intelligence, intuition, and inspiration that will help to facilitate an elevated awareness or frequency to make life easy tomorrow, and being able to transcend that information when you wake up via some sort of meditative practice. In order to facilitate the recovery, we need to have an unwinding routine. We need to make sleep a non-negotiable. And then we need to put our health as a non-negotiable. And so categorizing, is this behavior aligned with where I want to be health-wise, or is this behavior interfering with it? Because once again, things happen very slowly, then all of a sudden. And if they're establishing bad behaviors that interfere with their performance, it may not be present when you're 19, but it will be when you're 29, 39, or 49. And those same behaviors, good and bad, aggregate, accelerate, and compound exponentially the outcome. So I start with non-negotiable behaviors of sleep and health, family, finance, faith, the study of time and study of relativity. Then they can use the other 12 hours of their day to do all the doom scrolling and dating and whatever else that they want. But securing that 12 hours of non-negotiable time in a divine direction, teaching them to give meaning to their past aligned with that divine direction, I know that they will experience an incredible journey of happiness towards their potential.
I love that. It's kind of breaking it down into two, right? The negotiables and the non-negotiables with your day. And I think if you can compound that over a week, a month, a quarter, you can start to see that positive change. And I like how you use the word happiness too, because I think the big myth, to touch on what we opened the show with the arrival fallacy of, if I get to X, then I will feel Y. And for most of us, even if the X arrives, the feeling never does. And we just kind of move that goalpost farther and farther away. Was there a moment when you were on that rapid rise to success where you had an aha, where you knew that this wasn't working in the way that you thought it would, or the purpose, or the feelings just in your nervous system where you're like, huh, maybe this, what I've arrived at isn't the destination. Could you walk me through what that felt like?
Yeah, sure. And it was a culmination of four different things. One, my mom consistently telling me I was lost, and me consistently resisting her advice and telling her she didn't know what she was talking about. My dad giving me, when I was 30, the advice that money won't buy me happiness. In fact, gave me a birthday present of a jacket with no pockets, which I then told him to F off and never wanted to talk to him again. Called him a liar, cheater, manipulator, overseller, back-end seller. 6 years later, while I was running Lee Steinberg, my best friend, Robbie, who I've known since the fourth grade, who actually asked my wife for me to go study at sixth grade camp, and she said, no, tell him to ask me himself. Rob told me he wouldn't even go to the Masters with me because he didn't like who I was hanging out with, and he was worried that my behaviors were going to result in my death. Told him to F off as well. And then finally, the moment that you're talking about was 2 weeks after that, when I lied to my wife and told her I had a business meeting. And against her wishes, I went to the Grammy Awards with Little John, the rapper, did a whole bunch of drugs and alcohol, came home 5:30 in the morning, thinking I was outsmarting the devil, thought I was outwitting the devil. And my wife was waiting for me to tell me she wasn't happy, told me that I was, she was going to leave me, told me I better take stock in who I was and what I wanted to become. And my initial reaction was the same reaction that I had to my mom, my dad, and my best friend. F you, who do you think you're talking to? How dare you talk to me that way? And I went to bed. And when I woke up the next morning, I hated my mom, I hated my dad, I hated my best friend, and I hated my wife. And that's when I realized, wow, I better take stock in myself, because I hate myself. I don't hate my mom, my dad, my best friend, and my wife. I'm the liar, the cheater, the manipulator, overseller, back-end seller. And I better take stock in my values. I better rearrange my behaviors, my practices, and I better start executing with enjoying the consistent every day, persistent without quit, pursuit of my potential, not what everybody else wants from me and what's missing and I don't have. I had to stop lying to myself, projecting my insecurities, and take inventory of myself. And when I did that, I started to live with gratitude to give me perspective, forgiveness to give me ease, accountability to give me control, and effective communication with my source through me for others to allow me to live in spirit, inspired with the higher level of intelligence, intuition, and inspiration that has allowed me over 20 years now to make more money than I ever had for the sake of helping more people than I ever dreamed of and being happy, enjoying the consistent every day, persistent without quit, pursuit of my potential. I actually enjoy the things I don't like or love about what I love. And that's not easy. Even a better piece of advice is you could teach your spouse to love what they don't like or love about who they love. You'll have a much better marriage.
Well, that's beautiful. And as someone who's gone to many of your events, I know you're speaking the truth, because everyone in that room can feel that community, that energy, and that sense of combined purpose to help for you to help us and for help us to help each other. on that second half of call it your career, was there the opposite moment where you started to have that aha of like, wow, like what a shift. This is my purpose. This is where I felt that divine connection and the pursuit of helping others.
Yeah, it was so nice to, you know, see finally, because things happen very slowly, and then all of a sudden a community form around me of, you suggested, these people that want to help each other and know people that help each other. And for me, there was an aha moment that came from the simple perspective of, no longer am I going to be happy when, no longer am I going to make things happen. I'm always going to do my best. I'm always going to learn lessons. I'm always going to have fun. I'm going to have a definite purpose and a divine direction and align the meaning of my past in that divine direction. But my biggest concern is, what am I doing to interfere with the direction? I'm not worried about the outcomes, right? I am so detached from the outcome and so intentional doing, saying, thinking, feeling, and believing with the behaviors every day. I'm very intentional. I'm very active. I'm, you know, incredibly fired up and aggressive, but there is no outcome other than protection, promotion, love, and perfection. I expect no outcome that I understand. I expect there to be no evidence, or I expect the evidence to be a contrary to where I want to be, because if it wasn't, that means I'd be omniscient, that I actually know what I don't know. And one thing I do know, the longer I go, the less I know. And my favorite quote's right behind me there above my kids, which is, you're either humble or you're about to be.
Yeah. That's eerily what you say about detachment and behavior. I literally journaled about this morning, and I wrote behavior over outcome, and wrote a little thing on and the power of detachment from the outcome, which paradoxically is more likely to get you the outcome that you desire, is when you don't need it. And I think that is, you know, to kind of wrap up the conversation, that is what I really feel young people struggling with right now, is this burning need to keep up with the Joneses. Because what used to be, I need to be the best in my area, right? Or my school, has now been magnified with the power of the social media to be the best, or compare ourselves to the entire universe.
Yeah. Yeah. It's an energy gap that's finished where we started. I am versus this is what I want people to think I am. And where the danger really lies is the evolution of the ego. You see, the ego started to protect the body, right? Saber-toothed tiger cruising across the cave, scared. Ego protecting you from the saber-toothed tiger. Then it moved to the mind. We started to protect ourselves about what other people thought. We gave ourselves these defense mechanisms, a need to be right, need to be offended, need to be separate, inferior, superior, anxious, frustrated, angry, guilty, resentful, worried. But now, this next generation, they are faced with the evolution of the ego that not only protects the body, not only protects the mind, but it protects a false identity. It protects, this is what I think, or what I want people to think. And that's an illusion. And therefore, they are paralyzed with interference between them and their potential, because the ego is always into play, protecting the body, the mind, or this false identity, which they created for themselves.
Couldn't agree more. Well, I know you have to wrap up here soon, but I want to ask two more short questions. The first would be, What does enough feel like to you?
Enough feels like more than enough. It feels like an infinite, abundant, unified system of more than enough of everything for everyone. That's what enough feels like for me.
That's beautiful. And lastly, where can our listeners find you?
You know, I want to offer everyone in your community, if they email me, David is my first name, it means beloved, at D is my first initial. Meltzer means servant. So let me be your beloved servant, david@dmeltzer.com. I will sign, send, ship my book, pay for shipping and the book, david@dmeltzer.com. If you forget the beloved servant email, just Google David Meltzer. You'll find me everywhere. I'm blessed to have quite a big community, including incredible people like Will Naylor. And I'm blessed to be a part of your community of people that want to help one another, know people that help one another. Will, Thank you so much for allowing me to be here. You're one of my 1,000, empowering 1,000 to empower 1,000 to be happy, to make a lot of money, help a lot of people, and have a lot of fun.
Awesome. Well, thank you so much for being here. I know our listeners will get a ton of value from this conversation, and we'll talk soon. Appreciate you.
Appreciate you. Thank you, Will.